Now, he was one of Hollywood's leading men, a bullying and predatory movie mogul who preyed on many of the women he worked with until his arrest in 2018.
Harvey, you have anything to say?
This must be very humiliating, Mr. Weinstein. Mr. Weinstein, this must be very humiliating for you.
I was there the day he was arrested and charged with rape at a police station in Tribeca, the fashionable neighborhood in Lower Manhattan, which had almost become his personal fiefdom. And I was also there at the end of his criminal trial when he was sentenced to 23 years in prison.
Rosie, how you feeling? What do you think?
There was joy in this moment for the victims of Harvey Weinstein, that the convicted rapist will spend so long behind bars, that their voices have finally been heard.
For the first time, I can say I feel a sense of happiness, I guess, because this isn't a happy circumstance to be that we're all here for, but I feel joyous.
That was the voice of Tara Lee Wolfe, one of his victims who testified at the trial. This time last year, though, the conviction was overturned and a new trial ordered, although Weinstein remained in jail after being convicted of separate rape charges in California. The new trial got underway this week in New York, so let's talk to Cheryl Bader, a former federal prosecutor and now a criminal law professor at Fordham University in New York City. Cheryl, thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Nice to be here with you.
Cheryl, the case against Harvey Weinstein seems so overwhelming. So many women had come forward accusing him of rape and sexual assault. So remind us why his guilty verdict in the New York case was overturned.
So without getting into a law school lesson on the New York rules of evidence, the conviction was overturned because the trial judge had allowed testimony by several women who said basically, Harvey Weinstein sexually assaulted me too. Right. So, but Weinstein wasn't being charged with those assaults in that case because they had been time barred by a statute of limitations. So it was too late to bring those charges in the case, but they testified. And we have a rule that other bad act evidence, we call other bad act evidence, generally isn't allowed in court because of what we call this tendency to use it as propensity evidence. In other words, you know, if we believe he did it before, then you should also believe he did it again here. And although there are some exceptions to that rule, the trial judge allowed these victims to tell their stories, but the highest appeals court in New York, in a very close split decision, said that the propensity evidence was too prejudicial. And also that the judge's ruling that Weinstein could be cross-examined about those other attacks on those other women, that improperly kept him from taking the stand in his own defense.
Now, I recall at the time when the guilty verdict came through, his defense team was very confident about appealing this verdict and admitting the testimony of other women carried legal risks because Weinstein, as you say, was not charged in connection with their allegations. Do you think prosecutors made an error in the first trial in introducing that testimony?
So, look, of course, hindsight is 20/20, and the conviction was overturned. But as I said, you know, a lower appeals court and then, you know, part of the higher appeals court would have allowed in the evidence. I think it is a cautionary tale for prosecutors to be careful what you ask for, that if you ask for too much, you might actually be asking for a reversal. I tell my students, you know, you want to advocate up to the line, but you have to be careful. And it's a tricky balance. The prosecutor argued that they needed this evidence to establish that Weinstein knew that these women were not consenting. And so there was kind of this question of whether it would be really used for the issue of whether he understood that they weren't consenting or whether they were really going to use it as this propensity evidence.
As a former prosecutor, do you think this highlights a weakness in the law that works to the advantage of sexual predators, that women whose testimony can establish a pattern of behavior? And in Weinstein's case, the pattern of the behavior over the years was very clear, cannot tell their story in court in support of other victims.
So when it comes to issues of consent, I think there is a weakness in the law. But that weakness, I think, reflects the weakness that we have in our approach to, in society, to sexual activity and intimacy, right? Of course, we don't want to stifle spontaneity or passion by requiring a written consent, you know, contract, but we haven't figured out as a society how to navigate what can be a very muddy terrain around communicating at times of sexual activity. And, you know, of course, here there's testimony about, you know, force being used, but there's also going to be testimony, and was testimony in the first trial, that the victims continued to have contact with Weinstein after the alleged attack, that there were emails saying, I miss you, love you, asking for favors, and even subsequent consensual sexual encounters. But the prosecution, right, is calling forensic psychologists to testify. And this is also, you know, a very positive development in the law, allowing for this kind of testimony to understand why victims will continue to have contact with their assailant and will try to normalize a relationship after an attack, and also to understand how the sort of freeze or appease response to being attacked is just as natural as a fight or flight response. And so I do think that the law, you know, needs to, you know, come to terms with, you know, what are really sort of difficult social issues. And many advocates for reform in sexual assault prosecutions have been seeking, you know, relaxation in both the rules of evidence and also in statutes of limitation to understand why, you know, we understand now that victims don't necessarily come forward within that time period. And so I think the law does need to do some catch up.
And it's worth pointing out that Weinstein remains in jail because of his conviction in a separate case brought against him in California. He isn't going to be leaving prison anytime soon, whatever the outcome of the retrial in New York. Can I just ask you about some legal news that's coming overnight? FBI agents in Wisconsin have arrested a judge who they've accused of helping an immigrant evade federal prosecution. She faces charges of obstructing immigration issues. Briefly, we're seeing an assault on the judiciary. How worried are you by that?
I think this is very disturbing news. And unfortunately, this is just the next step in a long line of effort to undermine the judiciary and to exact fear in judges and in lawyers who seek to uphold the rule of law and hold Trump accountable. You know, it feels like every time you turn around, there's another escalation of Trump's battle with lawyers and the judiciary. You know, we've seen his calls for impeachment, taking away protection from, you know, of the U.S. Marshals, from judges who, you know, he has targeted on social media. You know, we see him ignoring court orders, and now having this local judge arrested by the FBI, it's very concerning.
Yeah. Cheryl Bader, a former federal prosecutor and now a criminal law professor at Fordham University in New York, thank you so much for joining us on ABC Radio National.
It's nice to be with you.